It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 252-247-7282, and let's talk legal.
Well, let's do just that. The phone lines are open, and I welcome once again. It seems like we've been doing this every day now. It seems the weeks fly by here. Welcome, Cecil. Welcome, Wes. Let's talk legal.
The weeks fly by, don't they?
Oh, my goodness.
I tell you, every Tuesday morning, 7 o'clock, here we are.
I know. Wait till you get old like me, Cecil. It'll go even faster.
How are you doing today?
I'm wonderful.
Good,
I'm wonderful.
Good.
We've been talking about trust the last couple of weeks. I think we'll continue that dialogue today and maybe get into the weeds, get into the nuts and bolts of trusts.
I think that trusts are highly kind of misunderstood. I think we've said the last couple of weeks, and we just need to say again that, you know, it's all about the purpose of the trust. For what reason are we creating a trust? And a trust, again, is a contract where we're holding certain assets, certain property, if you will. It can be real property. It can be stocks, bonds. It can be cash. It can be really anything being held for the benefit of another and being held by that famous person known as the, quote, trustee.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, the devil is in the details, which is in the provisions of the trust. And so let's talk a little bit about typical kinds of provisions that are in a trust.
Okay.
First of all, because of the fact that a trust has continuity, so to speak, I mean, a trust could last a long time. Let's say that a trust is for, you know, a child that has special needs. Well, they're maybe in their 20s or 30s. They might live until they're 70 or 80.
Just a normal lifespan.
We're talking about, you know, 30, 40 years of the life of a trust agreement, the life of that contract. And so clearly one of the provisions is going to need to be who are some of the alternate trustees. And in a trust such as that kind of trust that's going to last for many, many years, Wes and I, of course, are going to include provisions that give, if you will, Mike, a formula for, you know, we name Jane, we name George, we name Jim. But what if there's no, you know, Jane, George, or Jim? Then there is then a formula whereby a trustee can be appointed. There's an old adage in the law that a trust will not fail for lack of a trustee. And so we're always going to be able to find a trustee, but it's nice when the trust lawyers think ahead and use a formula to appoint a trustee. Now, one of the big provisions in a trust is always going to be, well, there's principal, which is the corpus or the gift, if you will, into the trust, the funding of the trust. And then, of course, many assets, as we know, generate income. And so the question that the client needs to address and we as a lawyer need to guide and discuss with them is, you know, what do we do about the distribution of the income? And what do we do about the distribution of the principal? Income, you know, generally is going to be distributed.
Mm-hmm.
That's the purpose of the trust, probably to provide income to the beneficiary. And then, of course, you know, principal, which is the corpus or the body of the asset that is in the trust. Now, that we have to talk about, because if you start tapping into principal in a big way, you know, then you may not have any more income. It's kind of like spending your assets in your bank account. If you spend them, they're gone. So if you spend all the corpus or the principal, then the assets in the trust are going to be gone. And so this has to be discussed with the client. The client has to be involved in the decision making. There has to be some discussion with the lawyer, of course, about whether or not the principal of the trust is allowed for the benefit of the beneficiary. And then, of course, again, devil in the details, there are certain standards that we lawyers know right out of the gate. One of the biggest standards is what's called the ascertainable care, support, and maintenance standard. And this is a standard that's often used, let's say, for instance, with a child who is needing assets held back until a certain age, maybe a second spouse and a spousal trust for the benefit of our spouse, maybe even for the benefit of the special needs child that we've talked a lot about. Care, support, and maintenance. So in other words, we're not going to go take principal out of the trust to, you know, go on a vacation. Okay, or to, you know, pay for household expenses. But we will take principal out of the trust to pay for an unforeseen medical need or an emergency like, you know, a hurricane that damages the property very, very significantly and the insurance pays but doesn't pay the full value of what's needed to put the property back to repair. So those would be usual and customary principal distributions.
It's interesting, too, and to reiterate from previous discussions on this, it's not a one-size-fits-all, and you just outlined that, nor is it trust is applicable to everybody. It's not right for everybody.
That's
right.
It's not
needed for everybody, I should say.
I think another thing, and then Wes is going to chime in here in a minute and kind of put this in his perspective, but, you know, the trustee is in what's called a reasonable person standard, okay? By the way, that used to be called reasonable man standard. I'm kind of proud of myself for changing it.
Good
because when I went to law school, you know, on the bar exam, it was known as the reasonable man standard. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you know, it needs to be called the reasonable person standard. But the bottom line is what would a reasonable person do under these circumstances? You know, when do we spend principal? Again, most of us don't go into maybe our savings account to, you know, pay for household expenses, you know, to do certain things that we want to do. These are paid out of our income. Mm-hmm. But if something unforeseen comes about, an expense, you know, a medical expense, a damage to our property expense, something that is unforeseen, then, hey, we may have to tap into our savings account, might we? And if we do, that's the kind of reasonable person standard that would also guide a trustee.
Kind of like a rainy day fund.
Rainy day fund. The trustee is always asking themselves the question, what would the grantor, the giver of the trust, the person who established the trust, I'm going to step into their moccasins, and what would they do? What would George do? George isn't living anymore. Mary's not living anymore. They created this trust for their grandchildren, for their child with special needs, for succeeding generations. What would they do? How would they feel about using principal for this particular reason? And believe it or not, all of those kinds of things have to be thought about, and provisions and wordage language needs to be in the trust that will guide the trustee.
Yeah, I can hear those conversations too. He would have wanted me to go on that cruise,
correct.
So I'm going to spend that money. Yeah.
She would have wanted me to have that fur coat, says the 35-year-old lady.
Exactly. You know,
or the Corvette, says the 25-year-old son. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you see a lot of this work over the years, and does it ever surprise you? Do you ever see anything new come out of a family wanting a trust for the you know, specifics that Cecil has laid out here?
Well, you know, every situation is different, Mike. And, you know, one thing I would mention, you know, based on, you know, what Cecil has said and historically what I've seen, a lot of people are confused. When you say trust, they automatically think bank.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's in their name sometimes, bank and trust.
Right.
Yeah.
Or when you say trust, they're thinking, okay, Mr. Lawyer, you're indicating to me that you want me to go ahead and just put my things in this trust, this box, just put it over there and it gets dealt with in a way that maybe is a little bit mysterious to me. So two things on that. Number one, I would say very few of the trusts that we prepare and very few of the trusts that come across our desk from other attorneys, offices that we're, you know, reviewing if we represent, let's say, a beneficiary or whatever it may be, are going to involve a bank, are going to involve a trust company. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, but it's a very low percentage these days. So kind of the answer to that question is just about every trust is going to be an inter-family type situation where we're looking within the family or close friends or someone you have a professional relationship with, like maybe a financial advisor or CPA or somebody like that, acting as trustee, you know, for the benefit of the family. And we're not involving, you know, a corporate entity like a, you know, like a bank, that's going to get paid, by the way, to serve as trustee. That was kind of the thing of the past. Frankly, when I started practicing about 20 years ago, I think we were kind of on the tail end of that being the heyday of banks serving as trustees. And even banks, they had trust departments, so on and so forth. And that was a part of the unified tax credit, the amount, the estate tax being, the threshold being much lower. So a higher percentage of the population being subject to estate tax. So that's changed over the years. You know, banks, as we well know, have restructured significantly, and they really are kind of hands off with that unless you meet a certain asset level that's, you know, pretty high these days. They just don't, they don't get involved in every trust. And moreover, you know, we're normally, again, not recommending that, because it's not necessary. Normally we're just dealing with, you know, the family as far as this unit. So what does that say to the client? Well, it's all in the family.
Right.
It's kind of all under the control of the family. So there's a certain level of comfort, you know, with regard to that. The other thing, as I just mentioned, you know, when folks, they think, okay, you're saying we're going to put all my assets over into this trust, what does that mean? Well, the vast majority of the trust that we prepare and the attorneys in North Carolina prepare for standard situations like a special needs situation, probably really close to the top of the list would be minor children. Sometimes grandparents want to do a trust for grandchildren, okay, that are minors. Those type situations, you know, we're not funding the trust now other than to put a corpus in it, which would be like $5 or $10. So basically the way that works, Mike, is that we set the trust up because it's part of our plan. Okay. It's
right.
for our special needs child. But we're not putting any assets in it now. So we're not having to file a tax return for it. We're not having to do, you know, do all this, treat it like a person yet, because it's so minimal as it relates to assets. And then when does it actually receive the asset? Upon the death. And it, because basically what we call it is a pour over type situation.
Right, right.
The will says, I leave, for example, 25% of my estate to the special needs trust for my son. Okay. And at that point in time, upon the death, that 25% of the estate then passes into that special needs trust. And then at that point in time, that's when we're actually using it. That's when we're using that special needs trust for that special needs child to make sure that the benefits, the, for example, SSI benefits that the special needs child are not disrupted, because anyone who's listening out there and is, who has gone through the process of getting those benefits knows once you get them, you don't want to lose them.
Right.
Right. So, but we have the funds in that special needs trust for that child. So what I'm telling you as an example there is that we're not taking large, we're not taking sums of a client's savings
assets.
Or estate or things they need to live off of, because, I mean, who knows how long they're going to live?
Right.
I mean, I would like to know who knows that. No one knows that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, we're not taking these items and dumping them in a trust and losing control of them. What we're doing is we're setting up the framework so that when the death happens, which it's going to happen, that we pour over into this trust, for example, for this special needs person or for this child or for this grandchild or for the second wife.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That would be another one that comes up, you know, that comes to play or to deal with the elective share statute.
So another way in which this that Wes is talking about is explained is the trust is standing by.
Yep. It's waiting.
That's in fact sometimes what lawyers will call it, a standby trust. Standing by, waiting. Okay. Are we going to need funds for the special child? Are we going to need funds for our minor children? Are we going to need funds for our spouse, our second spouse or third spouse, so that assets eventually pass back to the children from the first marriage? But the trust is standing by. It can be changed. It can be modified. It can be amended at any time, but we have our ducks in a row, don't we? We have our planning in place.
Yeah, it's a roadmap.
Because as Wes is mentioning, none of us know when, you know, the day is going to come for whatever reason and with whatever cause. And then at that point, we had our plan in place and our ducks were in a row. And this is a good thing.
Yeah, it is a good thing. And it's a roadmap and you're planning for the future because tomorrow's not promised. We live for today. Let's take a short break here. And, if you need to reach, Harvell and Collins, after the show, you're welcome to call during the show, but if you need to reach him after the show, 252-726-9050 or go online to harvellandcollins.com. We can take your phone calls during this show, 252-247-7282. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal. We're talking about trust. We're getting into the weeds. We're getting into the details of trust.
Correct.
It's a good conversation. Continue, Cecil. This is very informative.
Now, if the trust is for the benefit of minor children, then the provisions in the trust are going to say that the trustee holds the assets, distributes the income to support the child with all the things that children need. Okay, dance lessons and golf trips and camps and all the things that kids do. And then when the child becomes 25, for instance, maybe they receive half of the principal. And at 30, they receive the other half of the principal. That would be a classic, those would be classic provisions that clients would decide to make. A distribution of half at 25 and the distribution of the other half at 30. Of course, it can be anything. The client could say, well, I'd prefer that it be 25, 30, and 35, a third, a third, and a third. Okay.
And after they originate the trust, they could alter that breakout however they choose to divvy it out. It's like you said, it's a living document, correct?
Well, they can, as the grantor, the creator of the
yes.
trust can change those ages
yes.
at any point. But if something happens to them and the trust is actually fully standing by and now activated, if you will, now those ages are going to be fixed.
Okay.
Because that's what Dad set up.
Yeah.
That's what Granddad said to do. Distribute it. I'm no longer here, Dad. I'm no longer here, Granddad. And I'm telling you, trustee, to distribute it one half at 25 and one half at 30. And that can't be changed.
Yeah, it's when the originator is still alive that the change can be made.
Correct.
I get that. Okay.
Now, in a special needs trust, that principal distribution provision to distribute principal at a certain age is probably not going to be there. Because again, the purpose of that trust is to provide for the special needs child for their lifetime. Okay. Mm-hmm. Under a spousal situation where we're providing assets for a spouse, but under the context of a second marriage, third marriage, then the trust is going to continue to exist for the life of the spouse, the second. And when the second to die dies, if a husband sets up a trust for his wife, who's his second or third wife, mm-hmm. he says, trustee, I want you to hold these assets for the benefit of my wife and support her. But upon her death, I want these assets to go back to my children from my first marriage. Okay? Then the trust is going to terminate upon the death of the second to die, or the wife in that scenario. So you're beginning to see that, you know, trust will live for a while, and then they'll be terminated due to, again, circumstances, either a child reaching a certain age, a spouse no longer living, whatever the case might be.
Interesting. Interesting. So this is something, a plan that you map out, then you need to blow the dust off it every now and then to make sure that all of those parts that are laid out there are still
Well, one of the things that clients are always a little bit, you know, surprised about is, you know, the length of a trust. And, you know, Mr. Harvell, you know, why in the world does it have to be, you know, quite so complicated? Well, the language usually isn't complicated. The new language that we lawyers use in most of our documents now, we are encouraged to use, you know, more understandable language. And we, and trust language now that we see is not as complicated as it used to be. The language has been made more understandable through the years, those things which we call boilerplate. Mm-hmm. But hey, there's a lot of things to think about. Here's a mind twister, Mike. I just told you that granddaddy says, okay, give it to my grandchildren, give them the first installment when they're 25, and give them the second installment when they're 30. Well, suppose we give the first installment to the 25-year-old, and then, God forbid, at 26 or 27, but before 30, mm-hmm. something happens to that child.
Now what?
Now what? Now that's what? Right.
Now what? What? Now what?
Well, it depends on what the client says, and this is up to the lawyer to address these conditions with the client, okay? Usually, there would be two scenarios. The first would be that if the 25, 26, 27-year-old has a child, mm-hmm. if they've had a child by that time, then the other half would go to their child, who would probably be a baby, or so to speak, a toddler or whatever, and it would be, of course, held in trust, wouldn't it?
Your trust fund.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. If they have no children, the 25-year-old, 26-year-old, who isn't there to take her second half, she has no children, then it would maybe potentially go to the other siblings.
Okay.
And be distributed to them.
I can see that. I can ponder that. Let's take a final break here so we can have a little bit of time in our final segment to wrap up today's conversation. You're with Harvell and Collins. If you'd like to reach them after the show, call 252-726-9050. Or go online to harvellandcollins.com. We'll be right back with our final wrap-up of Let's Talk Legal after this brief message. In our closing argument here, our closing segment, we have about a couple minutes left. I'll throw it over to you, Wes.
Well, during the break, we talked about the big rocks. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure. You're dressed like you're ready to go out there.
Yeah. No doubt.
Real quick, though, they did bring the fish in, or else they couldn't weigh it.
They weighed it in at 494.
Yeah.
Tell the listeners that. It's interesting.
So, right.
It's not legal, but we can talk about something out
right,
of the law.
Right. The guys out of Hatteras, you know, I think they boated that fish like 3:30, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. They got in last night at about 7:45, and the fish was, you know, it had to be 500 pounds for the mm-hmm. fabulous fisherman, $550,000, which is not that rare to get a 500-pound marlin when you're
right.
marlin fishing.
Yeah, definitely.
To win the big rock is rare, but to get a five. So anyway, that's a big deal. It was just over 5 pounds. Under 500 pounds.
Yeah,
so these guys come from mm-hmm. Bermuda, basically, or wherever they were, you know, come in, and they call that weight out. And, man, mm-hmm. it's exciting to be leading the big rock.
Yeah.
But they were deflated because they were 6 pounds under. My goodness, $550,000.
But it doesn't matter what time they get the fish in. That wasn't a factor.
No, it got it. They were in time. It was like 7:45.
I think the point is when they hooked it up out at sea, uh-huh. it probably did weigh more than 500 pounds. But
dehydration. I mean, you know,
sure.
I'm sure it lost 10 pounds or whatever. I would guess. I'm the marine biologist, but I would think so.
6 pounds and $552,000 later,
ooh.
They could have had.
Yeah.
So
that's a lot more fun to talk about than trust, by the way.
It is.
Well, it'd be nice if you won that money. Now you got to think about getting a trust together.
Right. Yeah.
You don't have to fund it all at one time.
Well, there's a great example. I mean, suppose someone had won that money, and one person and they, mother and dad, say, look, I want to put that in trust for my children.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting to win the $500,000, $550,000. I've won it, and, you know, they consult with a trust lawyer about putting that out there for their children, maybe potentially when their children, even in a trust such as that, you know, reach the age of 30.
And they wouldn't have to dump
35,
the whole half a million there.
The intent being that this is going to be, you know, inheritance that they receive at an older age to make a real difference in their life at a little bit of an older age.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
See, you can begin to see how the language can mold the intention of the client. Trust are wonderful things, wonderful ways to benefit folks.
And it's,
absolutely.
And it's setting up the framework for, in this case, an unexpected windfall.
Correct.
You know, you don't know. So when you have such a like that, you need to call Harvell and Collins, 252-726-9050, or go online to harvellandcollins.com. Any of you anglers out there getting the big money, you may want to talk to Harvell and Collins.
Yeah, go
today.
Michael Jordan. We want to see you under that big rock sign.